This will come to orders, 3:20 p.m. on the 16th of March. With us today, we have Representatives Sadler, Johnson, Olson, and Miller. We do have a quorum to conduct business. We do, oh, and we have His Highness Speaker Chennault has joined us.
Million-dollar man, you have to remember, yeah. Mr. Chairman.
We got the man that makes millions.
We definitely have a quorum. We have a quorum and one. We have two items on the calendar today. First item we'll take up is House Bill 24, extending the sunset date of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. There's a draft CS in your packets. The only difference between the draft CS and the original version of the bill is that we went with the recommendation of LBNA to extend the sunset 8 years. So basically, that's the only difference between the two bills. But I would entertain a motion to adopt the CS as a working document.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we adopt the CS for House Bill 24.
Seeing no opposition, the main version of the bill is the or the CS, I'm sorry, which is 27LS173/M is the working document. And with us is staff to the Labor and Commerce Committee, Conrad Jackson will present the amended CS.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Representative Olson. Before the committee today, House Bill 24, adding a few digits, an act extending the termination of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. In the packets, the CS you've adopted, as the chairman said, would extend the sunset out to 2019, which was the recommendation of legislative audit. I think as everyone is aware, each year a number of boards or commissions come up for sunset review. Legislative audit will take a look at the processes involved in those boards and commissions and determine if they are acting in accordance with the legislature's wishes, if they've adopted or addressed issues in their particular boards or commissions that came up in the prior audits, and report back to the legislature. You do have a summary of that audit and the full audit in your packets. I'm sure as you saw in those reports, the RCA is acting, is fulfilling a public need, and they do continue to serve Alaskans. They have made that that recommendation of 8 years simply, I believe, because the RCA has made an effort to correct some prior deficiencies that were found in the audit. They are not fully complete. In the spirit of full disclosure, obviously they are not fully complete. You can read that for yourself in the report. They are making efforts to address those issues, and the RCA is an important, a very valuable tool for the citizens of the state of Alaska, and we feel that the commission should be extended. Now that you have adopted the CS as a working document, I have a updated fiscal note that will show the expenses for continuing the RCA through 2019, and just a little larger numbers since it carries on out in the out years. We have a couple of folks from the legislative audit that can speak to specific issues in the audit and hopefully answer any questions that the members may have.
I might add, we have Bob Pickett from the RCA online for questions, and also Stuart Goring, RCA legal counsel, online also for questions, should the committee choose. Thank you, Conrad. And we have at least one person in the audience. I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Thompson, so we have almost a full committee. Kathy Wasserman, are you with us? Didn't mean to wake you up.
Suffocating. suffer for that one, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm the director of the Alaska Municipal League. We have found in many cases, especially with utilities run by municipalities, that the RCA can be very helpful in helping those utilities regulate and also protects the customer. I know coming from a community that was actually under the RCA, the city of Pelican, our utility was regulated by the RCA. And while it did protect the customer, it also helped us get through a lot of the issues that we faced. And they were able to give us quite a bit of input because, as a rule, I had never run a utility before. So they were very helpful. So we are in support of the extension of the RCA.
Any questions for Ms. Wasserman? Thanks again, Kathy. I'd like the record to reflect we do have a full committee. Representative Holmes is with us now. Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? How about online? Well, seeing no one else, last chance, anybody in the room care to testify on this bill? Pardon me? Oh, and we have Chris from Ledge Audit here, too, if there are any questions from the committee. Seeing none, I'm going to close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, with that, hearing not a deafening silence, I'd like to move CS for House Bill number 24, Labor and Commerce, with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Seeing no opposition, we will move this bill out of committee and take a brief recess.
As was with.
We're back on the record.
Just in time.
Page two.
Page two.
Up to. Next item on the agenda is House Bill 63, and with us again, we have Mike from Representative Holmes' office. Come on up. And could you please state your name and affiliation for the record? Give us a real brief summary, and then we'll jump into public testimony.
Okay. Name is Mike Coombe. I'm representing, I'm staff for Representative Holmes, and House Bill 63 is a bill that that bans the use of three different types of polybrominated diphenyl ethers, and also sets up some other circumstances that allow the department to monitor other use of chemicals.
And those three were Penta, Octo, and Deca?
Penta BDE, Octa BDE, and Deca BDE. Said be brief.
Well, thank you. We've got a lot of people in the room, and we've got a few people signed up. I'm going to start with the continuing the public testimony with the people in the room, and we've got Bethany
Buchanan.
Your writing's almost as bad as mine, but not quite. please join us, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you
for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was not here to testify, but...
name and affiliation.
Oh, sorry. My name is Bethany Buchanan. I'm a nurse practitioner representing the Alaska Nurses Association, and more or less in the last hour decided to testify on this issue on their behalf, so I apologize for not having more scientific data. But I do want to say that the Nurse Practitioner Association does approve banning these chemicals, and one component of that I just want to speak to is most of these chemicals are known endocrine disruptors, and I just wanted to speak to what that means. That means that these chemicals can mimic estrogen. When the chemicals can bind into the cell instead of estrogen, they can cause changes that are affecting the development of children. And this can mean that children are Girls specifically are having earlier breast development, earlier menarche. Boys are having smaller penises, smaller scrotums. It affects their sperm development, so this becomes issues for infertility for both sexes later on down the road. In North America, levels are 10 or 14 times higher than are what are found in Japan and Europe. That means that it's in women's bodies and they're passing this along to their fetuses, so they're starting off with more chemicals. Also, the American Public Health Association, the International Firefighters Association are both opposed to this. And then there's a San Antonio statement on flame retardants. It's a group of 100 scientists that have all signed a statement calling for action to ban these chemicals. There is a lot of science behind the destructiveness of these chemicals. I was told that these chemicals are going to be banned federally in 2014, and I would just like to say that I feel it would be a really nice way to protect our children and their development if we could start now and do that sooner here in Alaska.
Any questions? Thanks again for joining us today. Emily Breeze? It looks like you traveled to get here today, too. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you again for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. My name is Emily Breeze, and I'm a student and with the Alaska Youth for the Environmental Action. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and the committee, for this opportunity to speak. Once again, my name is Emily Breeze, and I'm a junior at Tri-Valley School in Healy. And I'm a participant in the Alaska Youth for Environmental Action, as well as the Region 2 representative for the Alaska Association of Student Governments. And I've become increasingly concerned for my peers, friends, elders, family, and all-around fellow Alaskans. I've learned that we are all breathing in and consuming PBDEs, or polybrominated diphenyl ethers, something we assume that we're keeping us safe but are, in fact, harming us. So I heard this list of possible health effects of PBDEs, cancer, developmental effects, thyroid problems, and reproductive effects. And the obvious question that comes to mind is, why are we continuing to use these chemicals when there are safe economic alternatives already in the marketplace? It is a scary thought that my family could be exposed to harmful toxics from simply sitting on my couch or using my laptop. So how can I limit my exposure to these chemicals, toxics, when I don't have the right to know what's in my household products? As at the least, please allow me this right so I can make the decisions on what I feel is best for my health and my well-being. So thank you very much for considering this bill, and I urge you to take action to limit our exposure to PBDEs and to ensure the health of future generations of Alaskans.
Thanks. Oh, question, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Ms. Breeze. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Breeze, how did you become aware of this issue and the threat to your health and that of your friends and relatives?
Well, through the Alaska Youth of Environmental Action, we look at bills that are about the environment, and I learned about this. I was actually unaware of this before, which is very scary if you think about it, because it is all around us. It is on the top of mountains. I mean, and it's affecting us so much and could be affecting us way more than we thought, and yet I haven't heard of this until now.
And follow up, are there other similar environmental hazards that you're aware of? What other chemicals might you be being informed about? Is this the only environmental risk you know about?
Regarding flame retardants, yes, but... I mean, I could go on about other environmental concerns I have.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Emily, I've been on your mailing list for a couple of years, I think since 2 years ago when you had your annual meeting in Juneau. You might talk to whoever puts out the newsletter to maybe get some of the people that are new to the, well, not new to the legislature, but in their first term on the mailing list, too. I enjoy it. It comes out about once a month. And it's a good way to keep up with the issue from the eyes of the people that are a lot younger than us and probably more knowledgeable half the time. But thanks again.
Thank you. And thank you, Mrs. Holmes.
Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify that hasn't signed up? Got a few people outside the building. Ryan Kimberling, Anchorage, are you with us?
Yep.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you in advance for participating today.
My name is Ryan Kimberling. I represent myself as a voter, resident of Anchorage, Alaska. Thank you for your time and listening to my statement. I'd like to share my view on House Bill 63, a bill that is unnecessary and ill-advised because it would cause more harm than good. I understand the federal government already has plans in effect to place these fire retardants, and that's across all 50 states. So I think it would be counterproductive to handle this state by state. Center for Disease Control study from 1989 to 1998 showed that Alaskan Native children suffer the highest rates of fatalities in fires. My next point is, what would the cost of this be? It sounds like an unfunded mandate, and this should be handled at the federal level. I urge you to hold the issue for further consideration, and I thank you for your time and listening to my testimony.
Will you take a question, please?
Yes.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ryan, I'm just curious, similar question that was asked to one of the prior speakers. How did you become aware of the issue in this bill?
I read about this on media reports on the internet. That caught my interest. I saw it on Daily News, and I started reading about that for the past few weeks.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I can answer one question you have. The fiscal note for the first year is $387,000 plus
26.5.
26.5. Yeah, so a little over $400,000 for the first year. But thanks again for taking the time to testify. And I'd like to note that we've got Jennifer Shore from the Department of Law online for questions, and Kristen Ryan, who I'm putting on notice from DEC, that I have a few questions for. But Patty Saunders, are you with us?
My name is Patty Saunders. I've worked for the ARC of Anchorage for the past 11 and a half years. The ARC of Anchorage is one of Alaska's top 100 employers with more than 350 employees. It is our joy and privilege to serve more than 500 children and adults who experience intellectual or developmental disabilities and their families. These families rely heavily on government funding, especially Medicaid, to access the services their family members need as a result of their disabilities. At the ARC, we love our jobs, the people we serve, and their families. In fact, the only thing we would love more is for the ARC to go out of business because we are no longer needed, because preventable intellectual and developmental disabilities are in fact being prevented. Preventing just a single occurrence of intellectual or developmental disability would save between $1 million and $3 million over a single child's lifetime, depending on severity, according to the Governor's Council on Special Education and Disabilities. When one in six families is affected by an intellectual or developmental disability, the possible savings are staggering. Although not all such disabilities are entirely preventable, such as those caused by illness or injury. With HB 63, you have the power to help the ARC move toward its goal of putting itself out of business. HB 63 would take the first step toward eliminating the neurotoxins known as PDBEs out of our environment in order to protect the developing brains of our children. HB 63 asks the state to evaluate the alternatives and create a registry of safe fire retardants that will protect children, their families, and the firefighters who risk their lives to save them, and prohibit the continued use of PDBEs. It is sad that a doctor who works in a burn clinic can sympathize with burn children, but can't find similar sympathy for the children and parents who must face a lifelong struggle as a result of intellectual and developmental disabilities caused by a fire retardant chemical that could easily be replaced by something safer for developing brains and equally effective in its flame retardant qualities. Critics of most, excuse me, of most health and critics of most environmental health legislation argue that it goes too far, invades the right of private citizens, and adversely affects the economy. So it seems more than a little disingenuous that this bill is being criticized by those who support the interests of industry for not going far enough. Taking the first modest step described in HB 63 is not a worthless exercise. Taking the first step means identifying the alternatives our state believes are safer than PDVEs and alerting the public to the dangers of those chemicals so they can make better choices about the chemicals to which their children are exposed. How can that be a bad thing? Shouldn't Alaskans have the right to know? The idea forwarded by the professor from Florida on Monday that the persistence of PDVEs in the environment justifies doing nothing is astonishing. That sort of logic would have us still poisoning our children with lead paint, killing birds, and affecting human fertility with DDT. As for the argument that we should just let the feds take care of it on whatever relaxed timetable they come up with, I have two questions. One, whatever happened to the Alaskan can-do attitude and the much-vaunted pioneer spirit that we pride ourselves on in taking care of our own, as have Alaskan native cultures for 10,000 years? And two, which of you will accompany the staff on its hospital rounds Monday mornings and look the parents of a newborn child diagnosed with a preventable intellectual disability in the eye and say to them that the health and well-being of their child was not worth the $400,000 it will cost to implement HB 63? At the ARC, we don't measure people's worth in terms of dollars and cents. But for those for whom the numbers are important, let me reiterate. The lifetime cost of caring for a person with an intellectual or developmental disability is between $1 and $3 million. HB 63 will not put the ARC out of business anytime soon, nor will it solve the current Medicaid funding crisis overnight. But over time, the monetary savings will be enormous, as well as the psychic and physical toll on families. So whose interests are being protected by the critics of HB 63? There are no domestic manufacturers of PDVE, and certainly none in Alaska. The manufacturers of the chemical alternatives are domestic companies whose sales will increase when importation of PDVE ceases. So there's no harm there. Mattress and furniture makers can use the domestically manufactured alternatives already in existence, so there will be no disruption of their ability to ply their trade. No harm there either. So it can't be the economy the critics are trying to protect. Is it the firefighters? Well, actually no, because the firefighters support elimination of PDVEs. They are willing to risk their lives to save people and property, but they'd rather not be exposed unnecessarily to toxic chemicals like PDVE. And they'd rather that the children they're trying to save have the chance for normally developing brains. They're happy to have the rest of us use products with safer alternative flame retardants. So it can't be the firefighters the critics are trying to protect. What's very clear is that the critics are not willing to take even more steps to protect Alaskan children and their families from the heartbreak of preventable intellectual and developmental disabilities. And that is precisely why you, our Alaskan legislators, to step in and help. In 1975, 200 deaths per year from television fires galvanized this country into requiring manufacturers to make TVs more safe. If we can act to prevent TV fires, surely we can act to prevent one cause of preventable intellectual and developmental disabilities, which is likely causing fires and 200 occurrences per year. If acting now can prevent even one more and family from having to live with an intellectual or developmental disability, isn't that worth $400,000 now? Please act now. Support HB 63. Your great grandchildren will thank you. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Saunders? Thanks again. Representative Chenault.
Mr. Chairman, and I think she cut out there right toward the end, but did you say that there were 200 likely cases of this cause per year?
Well, that's no, what it sounded like when it came across the air.
I'm sorry. I said that there were likely more than 200 per year in this country. So I was trying to compare the 200 deaths in the United States annually from TV fires in 1975 and suggesting that more than 200 cases of preventable intellectual disabilities occur in this country per year.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, she sounds like she knows a lot more about this than I do. Is there likely a lot more than that that are going on, or is that your opinion that there's likely more than that that are happening per year?
One in six families in the United States is affected by an intellectual or developmental disability. That number is actually higher in Alaska for a number of reasons, which we probably don't have time to go into. But if you multiply one in six, or divide as the case may be, by the total American population and the birth rate, you'll find that it is far in excess of 200. Now, I'm not suggesting that every preventable intellectual disability is caused by PDDEs. At this point, it's not possible to determine what proportion is in fact caused by PDDEs. But what we do know is that the number is so large that it is almost impossible for it not to cause at least 200.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks again, Ms. Saunders. Next, we have Pam Miller. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Certainly. Yes, my name is Pamela Miller, and I'm Executive Director of Alaska Community Action on Toxics and a biologist by training. I would like to begin by thanking Chairman Olson and members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee for this opportunity to testify in support of HB 63. Alaska Community Action on Toxics is a statewide environmental health and justice organization that conducts research and also provides educational programs, technical assistance, and training. I would like to include the testimony I prepared for the March 14th hearing as part of the record and amend it to include the following remarks. I listened to the hearing on March 14th, and I was impressed with the level of engagement and questions from the committee members, and I hope that this additional testimony will contribute constructively to your deliberations and questions today. First, we do not have to compromise fire safety by enacting this legislation. Brominated flame retardants increase fire toxicity, but their overall benefit in improving fire safety has not been proven. Newly introduced legislation in New Jersey to phase out DECA BDE notes that when plastics and other products containing DECA are burned, they emit hydrogen bromide and other toxic gases. Studies indicate that the presence of these highly toxic gases in post-fire operations can be absorbed into the body through the skin or inhalation. Hydrogen bromide, a highly toxic and corrosive gas, penetrates the breathing apparatus of firefighters and poses a significant public safety threat to both firefighters and citizens. There are a range of alternative approaches to fire safety that do not require the addition of persistent toxic chemicals, as well as the availability and economic viability of safer chemicals. Mattress manufacturers, for example, are using inherently flame-resistant fabric barriers or boric acid-treated fibers rather than saturating the foam with persistent bioaccumulative chemicals. One alternative chemical, RDP, for example, was supported as an economically feasible and safer alternative in Washington and Maine, DECA ban in those states. Information from Citizens for Fire Safety, which is funded by the chemical manufacturers, and information on this group, I believe, is in your packets, and presented by people who testified before this committee on their behalf on Monday, claim that the safety and need for PBDEs, while they ignore the science and range of alternative approaches to achieve fire safety, I think they're really ignoring the science and also the availability of alternatives, the health effects of PBDEs, and the fact that these chemicals can be replaced. I know that healthcare cost containment is a high priority for this legislature. By updating our state laws governing toxic chemicals, I believe we can improve the health of Alaska citizens and contain healthcare costs. The federal system for regulating chemicals is broken, and I would just note that the EPA agreement that has been referred to in previous testimony is simply a voluntary and not legally binding agreement with only three
manufacturers here in the U.S., and it does not apply to all U.S. manufacturers, nor does it apply to imported goods. So it's important for Alaska, I think, to take the initiative to phase out these chemicals in products to protect Alaskans.
Well, thank you again, Ms. Miller. Any questions for Ms. Miller? Representative Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to clarify that last point because that was something that was discussed on Monday. The question came up, which is a question I actually asked myself early on, was if the federal government is going to phase this out and take care of it for us, then why would we waste the time and money? So I just wanted to underline to make sure that that's clear, that the federal government is not actually in the process of banning these, that it's a voluntary program by some manufacturers, but it is not a actual ban on the chemicals that's in process with the APA. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. It's voluntary and non-legally binding and only with three U.S. manufacturers. So as with the ban on certain that states have enacted on certain toys being imported from other countries, this would also serve to phase out those products that are used in our homes and workplaces, and I think add protection that the federal government has not been able to achieve, even though they've identified PBDEs as a priority substance. The EPA itself admits that they don't have the tools or the mechanism in place to enact phase-outs for these chemicals. So it's really up to the states, and I think that's why 12 other states have taken actions to reduce and eliminate PBDEs, including DECA. Four states have enacted legislation to phase out DECA. The European Union has also banned DECA, BDE, and I would point out that this is the world's largest collective economy, so this is really driving the manufacturers, as is consumer pressure, to phase out the use of toxic chemicals. So I would argue that this is something that really benefits businesses to use innovation and alternatives, because this is being driven by concerns coming from consumers. Thank you.
Thank you. Kristen Ryan. We've got lots of questions, Kristen. Kristen.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Representative?
Welcome back to Labor and Commerce. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Kristen Ryan, and I'm the director for the Division of Environmental Health that's in the Department of Environmental Conservation.
First question, Kristen, has the administration taken a position on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, the administration is neutral on this legislation.
Who's got the next question? Representative Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, I was hoping that we were having a little sidebar here at the head of the table. Kristen, I was wondering if you had information that you could share with us as to what the EPA actually is. There's a little confusion around the table still, I think, as to what the EPA actually is and is not doing in terms of mandatory versus voluntary phase-outs, and whether it just applies to production, manufacturing of the chemical, or whether it would apply to manufacturing of products using the chemical or importation of products using these chemicals. Do you have any information you can share with us as to what the federal government is or is not doing in any of those areas?
Representative Holmes, through the chair, I'll have to do a little more research to give you the detail, but what I am aware of is that the federal legislation that grants EPA the authority to regulate chemicals used in consumer products like PBDEs is inadequate, and we are supportive of federal change to give EPA the capacity to regulate products that they are now finding have potential problems in our environment and for our public health. I know EPA has gotten some voluntary agreements with manufacturers in the United States, but they're attempting to achieve that with manufacturers in other countries. But Again, those are voluntary, and they fundamentally do not have the ability to act on information that they have available to them about the chemical.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my reading of the... there's some confusing language, Kristen, in some of the documents we have in front of us that have been, we've been battling back and forth, so that was helpful to me in clarifying.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Kristen, this Representative Johnson, do you have the EPA bulletin by any chance? I'm trying to look for a number here. Gosh, EPA HQ OPPT 2010-10146.
Representative Johnson, I do not have that bulletin in front of me, but I do have, I've had several conversations with EPA about this.
Yeah. The way it reads is, EPA intends to support and encourage the voluntary phase out of manufacturers' imports of CDECA BDE. EPA has received commitments from principals and manufacturers and importers of CDECA BDE and initiate reductions in manufactured and imports and sales of CDECA starting in 2010, with all sales to cease December 13th, 2013. That doesn't sound voluntary or arbitrary. It sounds like all sales end. They have a voluntary program in 2010, and in 2013, all sales cease. Am I reading that wrong? Or maybe I should get it to you and let you evaluate it.
We can give you a formal response, but I do know EPA does not have the legal capacity to ban a chemical in commerce right now. But we'll evaluate that for you and get back to you.
Follow up.
How did we get rid of DDT?
Representative, through the chair, DDT is a pesticide that is regulated by a different federal act, the FIFRA, the Federal Insecticide and Rodenticide Act.
Okay, when you
so
said
it gives different authority to the administration.
Yeah, when you said chemical, I assumed DDT was a chemical, and they did have the right to ban that, but that's a special thing. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Ryan, some general questions. Stated generally, are PBDEs a health hazard in Alaska in your estimation?
Representative, through the chair, we have some evidence of PBDEs being found in Alaskans and in our environment and some of our species in Alaska. The levels are very low at this point, but and probably low enough not to cause a health impact. But it's of concern that we're finding them at low levels. In walrus, for example, and species that obviously aren't anywhere near PBDE product. So those are indications of concern. I do know we had one sample of fish from Big Lake, actually, last year in Arctic Star that had very high levels. It was one sample. So we are this year doing follow-up data collection to see if that was an anomaly or if it's an indication of a bigger problem in Big Lake.
Okay.
But for the health impact, I would defer to the health department to answer.
Okay. Well, wait, the follow-up, sir?
Don't we?
In a follow-up, I guess I'd ask you, since we have you on the line now, if you're at Division of Environmental Health, where would the hazards created by these chemicals stand relative to other hazards from the full range of environmental hazards? Give me some qualitative idea on a scale of 1 to 100. Is this the most important, the least important? Where would you put that in the range?
Representative Feather, that's a very difficult question. We have many responsibilities in my division and the department as a whole. I don't know where it would fall. I know that there is evidence that I believe is sound that shows there is impact from PBDs on human health that is negative. I think that is true. If it's more important than some of the other things we're responsible for, I'm not sure about that. I don't know.
Okay, fair.
Actually, we might have somebody online for questions. Nimha from the Department of Health, are you with us?
Hello?
Hello. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and I think we have a couple questions for you.
Okay, good afternoon. My name is Nim Ha. I'm the acting program manager for environmental public health at the Alaska Division of Public Health.
Okay. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Ha, my question is kind of a general scoping question, and it's to what extent are PBDEs a health hazard in Alaska?
Thank you, through the chair. Representative, I don't really have anything more to add than what Christian Ryan said. I don't believe we have any specific data to suggest that PBDE levels in people in Alaska are less or more or any different than anywhere else in the United States.
Okay. I would say as a comment, just the reason for my line of questions is I've heard a lot of assertions that this may have an effect. There may be some effects in animals. There may be some correlations between animal health and human health. I'm hearing a lot of maize and conditions. I'm just a real basic question, is this a problem? Is it a leave it at that. Thank you, Ms. Ha.
Yes, through the chair, Representative. Well, you are right that I wouldn't say that there is unanimous consent in the scientific community about the human health effects of PBDEs. Most of what we know do come from animal studies. There are a few studies that have been done in people. They're looking at levels in breast milk and cord blood, and I know of one study that looked at the association between levels of PBDE in, I believe it was cord blood, and developmental endpoints in those children at different ages in early life, and that study did find that there was association between higher levels of certain types of PBDEs in cord blood with IQ scores in young children, and that they were lower.
Mr. Chairman, do we have access to that study or a summary of that study anywhere in our materials here?
Is that a question to me?
No, actually.
That was a question.
Yeah.
Could you repeat it?
Yeah, I'm sorry. My question to you, sir, is do we have access? I've heard a couple references to the cord blood study that Ms. Hunt just referred to. Do we have a summary or a reference to that study anywhere?
We can find it.
Great. I'd like to see it.
That was easy. Is Kristen still on the line?
Representative Chenault.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to go back, and I don't know if there's anyone, if Kristen or anyone else that's online can find the information, but I'd be curious, and it goes back to conversations that we had one other time during the bill, and that was we talk about other chemicals to replace, we talk about green chemicals to replace the chemicals that we currently have, and that people think that they're available, and not only are they available, but they're comparable price to the current chemicals we use. I would be curious if there's any information out there on are those chemicals available, what their prices are, and how they really do compare to the current chemicals that we're using. If they're safer and are comparable price, then most manufacturers, I would think, would if there was the known concern versus somebody thinking that there was an issue there, I would think that most of these manufacturers would go ahead and make those changes anyway. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would just have some concerns that, as I stated earlier, do we know that these other chemicals that we're talking about to replace the current chemicals, are they indeed safe? What tests have been run on them? And how do we know? Because apparently we didn't know that this stuff was as bad for us. And I think one of the earlier testifiers stated that, well, they didn't run tests on them. Well, I would almost think that there's always tests run on chemicals of any kind, that are especially going into manufacturer of, I would think, especially like fire retardant chemicals. There's tests run on every chemical that's done. So, Mr. Chairman, I really don't have, I guess, a question in that other than I would just be curious as to the cost of these new greener chemicals versus the older chemicals and what kind of test results there may be on whether or not they are indeed any safer than the current chemicals we use.
And I certainly didn't hear a question or who to direct it to on that either. Yep. Kristen, I have a question for you. In the fiscal note, it says that you would hire a publication specialist to manage outreach and process, and in light of some of the ambiguities that we've heard about the effects and what it means, what would you say?
Representative, through the chair, I would like to comment, if I may, also to some of Representative Chenault's concerns. There actually is not adequate testing done on chemicals used in the United States in personal care products. And I think that is misunderstood by a lot of people. As I've already mentioned, the federal legislation that would grant authority to EPA in this situation to look at chemicals before they're used in products is inadequate. And there are thousands of chemicals in everything we use every day. That is not in the current law. The rule is basically you have to prove it's unsafe before it can be used until you prove it is unsafe, which is different than how pesticides are regulated, for example, which have the opposite situation where you have to prove they are safe before you can use them. So there is a lot of unknowns about chemicals that we're exposed to every day, and very few of them probably cause problems, thankfully. But I think there are probably some out there that do, and PBDs are certainly showing evidence that they fall in that category. Hopefully at some point our federal government will be able to give EPA what it needs to evaluate chemicals before they're put in commerce. But that definitely isn't the situation right now. As for greener products or alternatives, when it comes to flame retardants, from what I've been able to tell, there are adequate options that don't necessarily even involve chemicals. For example, cigarettes that go out now rather than continuing to burn, using different fabric mixtures on the surface, does a lot more to protect us from fire safety than the foam pad within the chair or cushion to burn. So I don't necessarily think alternatives means it's a different chemical. It could just mean a different manufacturing process. Or just other changes in our society. So an outreach person for the department, one reason the fiscal note is significant is because the department has no program to regulate chemicals. We, as everyone knows, have a broad authority to make sure discharges from industrial pollution are within certain limits of safety, but we have no authority to necessarily look at chemicals in consumer products. Therefore, this bill sort of would require from the ground up the building of sort of a program, at least at a minimum level, that would be able to do some of that work, especially because the bill includes the creation of a list of chemicals that we're concerned about, similar to what several other states have done, actually. That's not a new concept. And it would take, I think, an individual to communicate with the public all the different science that's out there and help them make decisions. And as you have said, there's a lot of information, and it is confusing. So it would take somebody to try to decide what the administration's message would be on chemicals and how we would communicate it.
Representative Johnson.
Kristen, thank you. I think I just heard you say we're creating a new department.
It's the Department of Agriculture.
I was waiting for that.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Chenault.
Just a comment. And Kristen, no, nothing intended by this statement, but you probably have a lot more confidence in the EPA than I do. And, you know, it caused me concern that we want to give them more power than what we currently do. And their ability to, it sure seems like to me that they can shut down everything else in the world. They don't have the authority to deal with an issue like this. Just a comment, Mr. Chairman, and nothing directed toward Kristen or the department.
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question or statement?
Just a comment. I couldn't let that go by. I think it's kind of interesting that it appeared a few minutes ago that the opinion around the table was that EPA was already doing this and that they were already testing everything before it went in. And so,
you know what opinion made.
I don't believe that came from
and
me.
And now we're fine with them not. So,
any further questions for Kristen? Kristen, I'm having a tough time today. Sarah Riker, are you with us? Pam Miller, I heard we may have cut off closing portion of your testimony. Are you with us, Pam?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was accidentally cut off before I had a chance to finish, so I appreciate the opportunity to say just a few more things. And I was just starting to say that I know that healthcare cost containment is a high priority for this legislature, and I think by updating our state laws governing toxic chemicals that we can actually improve the health of Alaska citizens and contain healthcare costs. We've heard that the federal system for regulating chemicals is broken and that states really are becoming the leaders in developing innovative laws that not only protect public health based on the common sense principle that hazardous or untested chemicals do not belong in consumer products, but that this actually encourages businesses to innovate because they're being demanded to do so by consumer pressure. And so as with public policy measures to reduce childhood lead exposures, actions that we take now to reduce and eliminate exposure to PBDEs will have immeasurable benefits in preventing intellectual deficits in generations of children. We know of the devastating effects of lead on the intellectual capacity of children because it was used as an additive in leaded gasoline and paint. There were dramatic public health benefits for our children's intellectual capacity as well as immense savings in healthcare costs as lead was removed from paint and gasoline. And just to point out, we didn't stop painting our homes or driving our cars. We removed the lead in favor of safer alternatives. And there is growing scientific evidence that demonstrates that chemicals widely used in consumer products do contribute to an epidemic of chronic diseases and disorders. The health effects of PBDEs are well established in the scientific literature and reflected in testimony submitted previously, just to say we are concerned because these chemicals interfere with thyroid function, brain development, learning, memory, and reproduction. There's a compelling new study that I will fax down that was referred to earlier. I have it with me concerning the health effects of brominated flame retardants in children that I think compels urgent action. This was done by the Columbia Center for Children's Environmental Health, and it showed that children who had higher prenatal exposures to PBDEs scored lower on tests of mental and physical development at ages 1, 4, and 6. These children are exposed to PBDEs before they are born, and it affects their learning and development throughout childhood and perhaps permanently. Concentrations of cord blood PBDEs in this study are similar to developing children throughout the U.S. And I would also point out that there's a study done by the Alaska the Arctic Monitoring Assessment Program that shows that women of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta have the highest levels of PBDEs in their blood of any population in the circumpolar Arctic. So just to say that I think that chemical policy reform is good for business, and we see that leading companies are highly motivated to identify and use safer alternatives. Consumers are demanding it. And even in a depressed economy, companies that produce healthy products are experiencing unprecedented and impressive growth. They're thriving, not just surviving. They prevent liability. They protect their investors through these innovations. So today's business leaders are concerned about the health and business impacts that could arise if their products contain toxic chemicals. There are new opportunities for businesses to innovate and make U.S. businesses more competitive. I think we have an ethical responsibility as a society to protect health and reduce the cost of health care by preventing unnecessary exposures to chemicals that are known to cause harm, including PBDEs. I think children and others have a right to live in an environment in which they can reach and maintain their full potential. And just in summary, we would urge you to pass House Bill 63 in order to protect health, particularly the health of vulnerable populations, including pregnant women, developing children, firefighters, and other workers. Thank you.
Thanks again, Ms. Miller. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify? Seeing none, we're going to hold public testimony open on this bill, and we are going to gavel out at 4:20.